Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling, I think, one of the most confusing and challenging areas in mental health, and that's the bipolar spectrum.
It really is.
We have this incredibly detailed account from a listener who's really struggling. They've got this whole mix of symptoms, irritability, these bursts of energy, depression, anxiety.
Like we're all tapestry of experiences.
Yeah, and they've been bounced between potential diagnoses. ADHD, anxiety, bipolar. So our mission today is to follow the path of a clinical consultation to really define what bipolar spectrum disorder is.
And, you know, to understand why these diagnoses get so confused, the core of it really is to figure out the difference between these big episodic mood swings and the sort of baseline day-to-day mental health challenges.
Right.
Because the listener came in with just this high level of distress. It was a really confusing mix of irritability, anxiety, depression, and high energy. Clinicians, you know, we immediately see that and think mixed features.
Okay, so let's start there. Let's start with that baseline, the sort of chronic chaos that this person is living with every single day, even before we get to the big up and down cycles.
Right.
They talk about this constant noise, like a million things are always running through their head.
It sounds like a state of just constant cognitive overload. And when your brain is running that hard all the time, it doesn't give you a moment's rest.
And that leads to anxiety, overthinking, worry.
Exactly. And that fuels this really high baseline level of irritability.
Which they describe perfectly. They say they're constantly annoyed at everyone.
Yes. But what's so interesting is the texture of their anxiety. They talk about crying because the anxiety is so intense.
Mm.
But they clarify that they're crying because they're mad. The anxiety is coming out as this overwhelming rage and frustration, not just fear.
Wow. That's a really specific detail.
It's a very common presentation when mixed features are involved. You see this agitation and anger just bubbling up constantly, and people just think, oh, I have a bad temper, or I'm just really stressed.
And of course, that feeling of being disorganized all over the place, that's where the ADHD label came in, right? Wanting to start a million projects, but not being able to focus on one.
It's a compelling idea, but we have to ask, is that disorganization constant, or does it change with their mood?
Oh, okay, so let's look at the other side of the coin. The depressive periods.
Because that's where the pattern starts to emerge.
And these low periods, they sound really serious. They last for several days or even weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all the classic symptoms, no motivation, low mood, hopelessness, and those awful what's the point moments.
And what stands out to me from the sources is just how hard it is for them to break out of it. It's not just a bad week, it's a significant dip where they feel completely stuck.
But here's the thing that really feels like a pivot point. The moment a clinician would lean forward.
I think I know what you're going to say.
They report that sometimes they just snap out of it one day.
Right, suddenly, without any obvious reason. It's not like they tried a new therapy or something great happened. The mood just lifts.
On its own schedule.
And that kind of spontaneous resolution, that's a huge indicator. It points to an internal biological clock that's governing the mood state, not just a reaction to life events. It suggests a mood cycling disorder.
Okay, so that cyclical nature, that leads us directly into the up cycles.
The red flags.
Yeah, these periods of high energy and impulsivity that really start to build the case for bipolar spectrum. And we have to talk about the history of impulsivity here.
We do. There's that pretty extreme example from when they were 19.
Chasing a sibling with knives. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
The mother was apparently about to call the police.
It's a high magnitude event. It shows a complete rapid failure of impulse control driven by this explosive rage. That's so far beyond just a typical teenage argument.
Absolutely. And while that was years ago, you can see that same thread of poor impulse control showing up more recently.
In different ways, yeah.
They mentioned driving a little recklessly, feeling excited, having places to go.
That kind of impatient high-speed energy. And then, of course, the gambling.
The gambling is such a perfect example of how risk assessment gets warped. They won $7,000, which sounds great.
On the surface, yeah.
But they also admitted to throwing in a lot of my money from a paycheck to do it. The win kind of hides the incredibly risky behavior behind it.
Exactly. And then you have to tie this back to the mixed features, the agitation. There's the recent self-harm.
Hitting their head against the wall or with books when they get frustrated with work.
Which has led to HR getting involved. So you see this combination of intense frustration, anxiety, and impulsivity. And that is a very dangerous place to be.
So all these distinct up periods, the euphoria, the energy, the bad judgment, what's the clinical term for that, when it's not full-blown mania?
That's hypomania. And it's really the defining feature of bipolar 2 and bipolar spectrum disorder. The listener says these good periods happen a couple of times a year, last about 4 days.
And they feel euphoric, really, really happy.
And the sleep thing is a dead giveaway, right?
Right. The decreased need for sleep, that's a clinical hallmark, isn't it?
It is. They're running on maybe 3 hours of sleep and feeling totally fine, energized even. And the critical insight here is that the patient often likes it. They don't see it as a problem.
So it flies under the radar.
Completely. But for a clinician, that sustained elevated mood combined with less sleep and more impulsivity, that's the pattern. It's the deviation from their normal self that gives us the diagnosis.
Okay, but there are other things going on here that complicate the picture. Let's start with family history.
Which is pretty significant in this case.
A maternal aunt diagnosed with bipolar who takes lithium. And both parents have depression.
That genetic link definitely increases the probability. But we still have to circle back to the attention issues.
The distractibility, wanting to do a million things.
But the key is that it gets demonstrably worse when they're feeling up energetic.
Ah, so if the attention problems only spike during the mood episodes, that suggests the attention deficit is a symptom of the mood disorder.
Exactly. It's not a standalone chronic thing like pure ADHD. The problems are episodic, not constant. And that is a huge, huge difference.
But now we get to the factor that, as the expert said, really muddies the water.
Substance use.
Daily marijuana use since age 16. And they're using it to relax and wind down.
Which makes sense. That's why many people use it. But they also say stopping makes them more irritable.
This has to be a massive variable for a clinician.
It's huge. Daily substance use can, you know, it can induce the very symptoms we're trying to diagnose. Cannabis can cause anxiety. It can trigger hypomania or even psychosis in people who are vulnerable. It makes it incredibly difficult to see the underlying illness.
So what's the advice? You can't just tell them to stop something they feel they rely on.
The advice was pragmatic. It was focused on brain health. The suggestion was to try even a 10% reduction, because while it might feel relaxing in the moment, the long-term data is very clear. Daily use can reduce brain function, and it actually works against long-term mood regulation.
So it's sort of masking the problem and potentially making it worse.
It can be, yeah. It makes achieving true stability almost impossible.
And what about Adderall? The listener had tried it, said it helped with organization, but made the irritability worse.
And the expert was very wisely cautious about that. The recommendation was to wait. Stabilize the mood disorder first.
Because stimulants can make things worse.
They carry a significant risk of pushing someone prone to hypomania right into an episode. The thinking is simple. You regulate the core mood problem, and very often the attention issues just get better on their own, so you don't even need the stimulant.
Okay, so after looking at all of this, the depressive episodes, the hypomania, family history, the agitation, the clinical conclusion was bipolar spectrum disorder with mixed features.
Yes. And just to quickly define that again, mixed features means you're getting symptoms from both poles at once. The high energy and agitation are happening right alongside the anxiety and irritability.
And for treatment, for long-term maintenance, they were given two main options.
Right.
Let's start with the gold standard, lithium.
It's favored because it's so good at keeping patients even-keeled. It's widely seen as the most effective psychiatric medication we have for bipolar disorder.
Why is it the gold standard? What makes it so effective?
It's the only drug that has been consistently proven to reduce the risk of completed suicide in bipolar patients. That's an efficacy benchmark no other drug can match.
But there was a complication here. The listener wants to start a family soon.
And that's where lithium becomes a more complex choice. That's where the second option, lamotrigine or Lamictal, comes in.
Okay, so why lamotrigine?
It was recommended because it has a lower risk profile during pregnancy. Lithium, if you take it in the first trimester, carries a small but real risk of a heart defect called Epstein's anomaly.
So lamotrigine is a safer strategy if someone is actively trying to conceive.
It's a classic risk-benefit calculation, and in this case, it pointed towards lamotrigine.
And with lamotrigine, there is a really critical, non-negotiable instruction for starting it, right?
Absolutely crucial. To avoid a rare but life-threatening rash called Stevens-Johnson syndrome, you have to start the medication incredibly slowly. The protocol is one tablet a day for 14 days, and only then do you start to increase it.
Can you give us an analogy for that? Why is the slow start so important?
think of it like you're easing a really sensitive engine up to high speed. You have to introduce the fuel gradually or the whole system could seize up and fail.
And if you miss a few days?
If the listener misses the medication for more than 3 days, that biological tolerance resets. They have to go all the way back to the beginning and start that slow titration process over again.
That's vital to know. Okay, and for short-term help, they were also prescribed quetiapine, Seroquel.
But only as needed. This is not a daily maintenance drug. It's a tool, a sort of safety valve for when the anxiety or energy gets too high or when sleep is just completely gone. It helps them stabilize before an episode really escalates.
Which brings us to the big question everyone facing this diagnosis has. Is this forever? Will they have to take medication for the rest of their life?
For a bipolar spectrum diagnosis that's confirmed with clear episodes like this, the general expectation is yes, long-term maintenance.
There are no exceptions.
There are some, sure.
Yeah.
If the disorder was purely substance-induced, for example, and stopping the substance leads to full remission. But true bipolar disorder is biological, it's cyclical, so the goal is lifelong stability, not just a temporary fix.
Okay, so to wrap this up, let's talk about treatment confidence.
Right, and to empower the listener, you know, while lamotrigine is a great choice for them, we shouldn't forget how effective lithium is. People hear about side effects like kidney issues, but that risk is greatly, greatly reduced by keeping the therapeutic level low 0.8 or lower and using extended release versions.
And when you follow those protocols,
the results can be stunning. In some practices, you'll see 90% of bipolar patients on lithium and 70% of those patients are in full remission. That should provide a lot of hope.
So what does this all mean for you, the person listening, no matter what your diagnosis is? I think this deep dive really shows how slippery and deceptive mood disorders can be.
Absolutely. The listener's symptoms look like anxiety, they look like ADHD, they look like severe depression.
And we learned that even other conditions, like severe PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder, can mimic bipolar II symptoms.
The key takeaway has to be this. If you're trying to navigate mental health information, the path to a correct diagnosis requires you to pay meticulous attention to the duration and the pattern of your symptoms.
It's not just what you feel.
It's how long you feel it, and whether it's a constant chronic baseline for you, or if it's a distinct cyclical episode that comes and goes.
And we'll leave you with a final provocative thought to take with you. We noted that clinicians strictly avoid prescribing traditional antidepressants, SSRIs, like Zoloft, or Prozac to patients with bipolar disorder.
Right, because of the risk of triggering hypomania or those mixed features.
So if we know bipolar spectrum disorder is widely underdiagnosed, what does this suggest about the millions of people who get misdiagnosed with just unipolar depression and are treated only with SSRIs? Are we potentially worsening or destabilizing an unrecognized bipolar condition?
That is a vital question for the entire field and a great place to end.
Something to ponder on your next deep dive. Thanks for joining us.